Would you turn your Bibles, please, to the second chapter of Genesis, Genesis chapter 2. While you're turning there, I'll just make this observation to you about Jesus and one of the many things that Jesus said of himself. He offered many different self-descriptions. And one of the things that he said on one occasion was that he was the Lord of the Sabbath. Well, what exactly did that mean? In order to understand that, it is, I think, certainly necessary for us to understand exactly what the Sabbath was. And so I want to talk to you for a few minutes this evening about the Sabbath and begin looking at that from this text in Genesis chapter 2. Now, the word Sabbath it comes from the Hebrew Sabbat, which means simply to rest or to rest from labor. And it appears in this text that we'll be reading in Genesis 2 and the first three verses. The Greek word was really just a transliteration, as is our English word. The Greeks used the word sabbaton, as we do, of course, of Sabbath. But the idea is of there being a rest that takes place. Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3 tell us that the heavens and the earth were completed and all their hosts. And by the seventh day, God completed his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. This is the first time that there is a reference in the Bible to a Sabbath. This is the origin of the Sabbath. The seventh day was the day of the Sabbath, the day upon which God rested from his creation. It's also the first reference in the Scriptures to the word or to the idea of sanctification. God, we're told in these verses, sanctified this seventh day upon which he rested. To sanctify something simply means to separate it, to set it apart to an exalted or an elevated position. So the first time that a thing was elevated in the wordings of the Scriptures was in the identifying of this day, this seventh day, when God rested. The reason for this uniqueness of this day was simply because it was the day that God rested. That is, he rested from his creation, from his work of creation. We should not, I think, get the idea here that God rested in the sense of being tired and needing some kind of relaxation, some kind of break from the work that had drained him, as we often need a period of rest. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 28 says of God that he does not become weary or tired. And so God rested in the sense not of needing a period of restoration of his strength, but rather he rested in the sense that he stopped creation. He stopped that work of creation. He rested, or he came to cease in this work of creation. And it seems worth noting, then, as this is the first indication of a Sabbath, of a rest, that it is tied not to men and women, but it's tied to God, that it is God who had this day of rest. And that there is really no indication of humans having a day of rest. No evidence of God requiring men and women to rest upon the seventh day. From here in Genesis chapter 1, from the beginning, all the way up to the time of Moses, when we get up into Exodus and when we get to the 16th chapter of Exodus. There we begin to read of a Sabbath that is associated with people. Now, This period of time from the creation until the time that God gives the law of Moses to the nation of Israel, we often refer to as the time of the patriarchs. And there is really very little that is revealed to us about the worship and the dealings of the patriarchs with God from the standpoint of how they worshiped. There are some similarities that we can draw from what they did to what the Jews did under the law of Moses. For instance, we can see that the patriarchs offered sacrifices in worship to God. And we, of course, see sacrifices being outlined and being prescribed to the Jews for their worship of their God. But there's just an awful lot that we don't know about their worship. There is absolutely no reference to there being a particular day upon which they worship. Now we may draw a conclusion. Some may assume that, well, this Sabbath and this exaltation of the seventh day must have been something that those patriarchs, those people in all of those centuries up until the time of Moses, it must have been something that they did acknowledge and did observe. And that may be. But we don't know it. There is no statement, no reference, no even inference of the patriarchs observing this day, this seventh day. So the origins of it, it would be, I believe, accurate for us to say, the origins of the Sabbath are something that reside holy with God and with what He did when on the seventh day after He finished creation, that He then ceased that creation and He exalted that day. He sanctified it. But we also see then that from the origins of the Sabbath, we do come to a point in time where there is an ordinance of the Sabbath. That is, it does become something by divine law, by divine edict. It does, in the observance of this seventh day as a day of rest, does become something that is required of men and women. It's mentioned, this Sabbath, the next time in the Scriptures, after the Genesis reference that we've looked at, it's mentioned again in the book of Exodus, in the 16th chapter, where we have a description of the nation of Israel shortly after being delivered from Egypt, and they have made their departure, and they are making their way towards the Mount Sinai, to where they will receive God's law. Well, we read in the 16th chapter of Exodus where they began to grumble as they made their way along this route to Mount Sinai. They were grumbling about the lack of food. And the Lord made provision for them. He said He would make provision for them. He would give them the manna that we're probably all familiar with, that each day there would come from the heavens bread that they could go out and collect. But God gave them some regulations about collecting this bread. And He told them they could go out 6 days and that they could collect only what they needed for that one day's provisions. And so if a man had a large family with several children, he'd go out and he'd collect a large amount for just one day, though. And if a man was just he and his wife, he would go out and he would collect enough for he and his wife for that one day. It would be a much smaller amount than what the man with the large family would collect. But both would collect only for one day. We read in Exodus chapter 16 that God did this to test them, to see if they would truly rely upon him for provisions that they needed. But he gave them instructions as well about the fact that they were not to collect this bread on the seventh day. In fact, on the seventh day, it would not even be available. And so they were not to go out. And some of them did go out. And they did begin to look around and they wanted that bread. Of course, it was an indication that they were not trusting in the Lord. Because the Lord had told them that on the sixth day, when they went out to collect, they could collect a double portion. Not just for one day's supply, but they could collect for 2 days' supply. So that on the sixth day as well as the seventh day, they would have food. But all of this required their trust in God. And so he became, of course, dissatisfied with those who were collecting, or at least attempting to collect on the seventh day. But I want you to notice with me in Exodus chapter 16 what he has to say regarding these provisions and these allowances. He says in chapter 16 and beginning in verse 22, it came about on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers for each one, when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses. Then he said to them, this is what the Lord meant. Tomorrow is a Sabbath observance, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over put aside to be kept until morning. So they put it aside until morning as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul, nor was any worm in it. Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it. On the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none. And it came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So once again, we see a rest that takes place, a Sabbath that takes place on the seventh day. This time, however, it is not a Sabbath of God in the sense of God resting, but it is a Sabbath that God has required of these, his people. Now, God is going to codify this in just a short while. When you turn over to Exodus chapter 20 and in verses 8 through 11, as he gives Moses the law, he says to him this regarding the Sabbath. In verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. That was God's command in the Old Testament, in the Ten Commandments, regarding the observance of the Sabbath. And notice what he ties it to. Ties it back to his Sabbath, back to the creation, to when he ceased from work. So we see then that this is something given to the Israelites, given to the Jews to observe. In fact, we get a little bit of a commentary on this. If you'd look over in Nehemiah, the 9th chapter, verses 13 and 14. Of Nehemiah chapter 9. This is what Nehemiah had to say regarding these matters. He says, then, speaking of God, speaking to God about what God had done, he says, then thou didst come down on Mount Sinai and didst speak with them from heaven. Thou didst give to them just ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments. So thou didst make known to them thy holy Sabbath and didst lay down for them commandments, statutes, and law through thy servant Moses. You see, what Nehemiah sets forth here is that the Sabbath was something not known to the Jews, not observed by them, up to this point in time that we've read about back in Exodus. And when God came to them at Mount Sinai, and he gave them these good laws and these good statutes, and they then abided by those laws and those commands. Turn, if you would, back to the book of Exodus in the 31st chapter, and look at what is further declared by Moses, chapter 31 of Exodus, and in verses 13 and 14. Where he says this, "As for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, you shall surely observe my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Therefore, you are to observe the Sabbath, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death, for whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among the people." Did you notice what he says? He's regarding this Sabbath. He says, first of all, it's a sign. But it's a sign, he says, between me and you, Israel. It was a sign given by God to Israel to acknowledge and to represent the covenant that was established between them there at Mount Sinai. And also, a second thing, did you notice as well that he says that at the end of verse 13, that this was done that you may know that I am the Lord who what? Who sanctifies you. This is what the Sabbath, this sign, indicated to the people. Remember back in the Genesis account, God did what to this on this seventh day that he sanctified it. Set it apart, exalted it. Now he's saying, as he gives the nation of Israel this sign, that this is what it indicates, that I have sanctified you, set you apart, made you holy, made you separate in my eyes. The point is that this could only be true if this was a sign that was reserved to them and peculiar, unique to them. And that's what it indeed represented to the Jews. We won't spend a great deal of time on it, but certainly one of the interesting studies in the New Testament scriptures and the Gospels is of the relationship of Jesus to the Sabbath. We've already acknowledged the fact that Jesus said, "I am the Lord of the Sabbath. It's mine." This grew out of a conflict that existed between Jesus and the Jewish officials who actually accused him of violating the Sabbath. In the book of John, in the 5th chapter and the 18th verse, John expresses that in this way when he says regarding Jesus that he violated or he broke the Sabbath. Now that's not a statement of fact. It's not a description of what Jesus did. It is a statement of what the Jews said about Jesus. They accused him of breaking the Sabbath. But Jesus, born as a Jew, Galatians 4 and verse 4, born as a Jew, born under the law, lived under that law, sinlessly, without failure. He observed the Sabbath. Now, the problem was, as you read through the gospel, the problem was not that Jesus ever violated the Sabbath. The problem was he violated the restrictions that the Jews had placed upon the Sabbath. Jesus never broke God's law regarding the Sabbath. He broke their law regarding the Sabbath. What we need to always take note of is that breaking men's laws is never equivalent to breaking God's law. And The reverse is true too. Breaking God's law is not equivalent to breaking man's law. Breaking God's law is far more serious, isn't it? Well, Jesus lived under this law of God. He lived according to the Sabbath regulations. As I say, we won't look at the many, many references. Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6 is a good representation of how Jesus confronted these folks regarding their own regulations of the Sabbath. But it's interesting to note, in all that went on with Jesus and the confrontation with the Jewish officials about the Sabbath, nowhere did Jesus or his apostles ever teach that those that would become Jesus' disciples, those that would live under the covenant of Jesus, would be required to keep the Sabbath as the Jews kept it. And so the next thing that we must acknowledge when we talk about the Sabbath, what it is we need to acknowledge the fact that it's obsolete. The obsolescence of the Sabbath is affirmed by the apostles and the prophets of the New Testament. If you'd look over in the book of Hebrews in the 8th chapter, you'll notice in verse 13, as the Hebrew writer is engaged in this very lengthy discussion about the Old Testament law, how it relates to Christians and how Christians were to relate to the Old Testament law, even those Christians who were Jewish. He says this in verse 13 of chapter 8, that when he said a new covenant, and he had just previously quoted from the prophet Jeremiah, in which the prophet Jeremiah predicted a time to come when God would establish a new covenant. And what the writer is saying here is, now here's the significance of the fact that he uses those very words, new covenant. When he said a new covenant, he has made the first obsolete. Whatever is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to disappear. You can read those verses that precede where Jeremiah talks about God establishing this new covenant in which he says it's not according to that first covenant that he established when he took the fathers by their hand and led them out of Egypt, took them there to Mount Sinai, gave them that first covenant. He says this new covenant is not going to be according to that covenant. That's why it's so significant that he calls it a new covenant. It's going to be different. And in fact, he says the first one or the old one is going to become obsolete. You know, that's true of anything that gets old, even us. We become obsolete. You get old enough, and you die. You're not active. You're obsolete. In that old covenant, by virtue of the fact that it was the old one, the writer says, will become obsolete. It becomes inactive. It's not a statement that there was something wrong with it. Not a statement that it was flawed, that God somehow had erred in the creation of that covenant. Now he's trying to correct his mistakes. It did what it was intended to do, served its purpose, but it became obsolete when the better covenant came into effect. And when that happened, all of the things associated with that first covenant, with the Old Testament, all of the Ten Commandments, those things became obsolete, including the law regarding the Sabbath and the Jewish observance of the Sabbath. Paul further speaks of this in his letter to the Colossians, in Colossians the second chapter, and in verses 16 and 17. He says, therefore, now remember, he's writing to Christians, written to them about their deliverance by Jesus, about their becoming part of this new covenant with Christ. And then in verse 16, he draws this conclusion. That is, because of all of that being true, therefore let no one act as your judge in regard to food or drink or in respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come. But the substance belongs to Christ. Those things associated with the old law served their purpose. They were a shadow of things that were better, that would come one day in the future. But those things have now come. Christ is the substance. And so he says we need to be governed, not by the old law, but by Christ. And because of that, the old law that invoked these regulations about the Sabbath passed away. Sometimes you may have heard people speak about the Christian Sabbath. You know, that Sunday, as Christians meet and worship on the first day of the week, the New Testament refers to it as the Lord's Day, that because of that, that it is the Christian's Sabbath. Puritans were pretty strong in making that argument. In fact, they, as well as many religious groups following them, would invoke the same laws and regulations from the Sabbath upon the first day. If you lived up in the northeastern part of our country during the colonial days, and you lived among the Puritans, and you went out and you worked in the field on a Sunday, well, they're liable just to take you out and stone you to death. They weren't going to approve that. That was sin in their eyes because it violated the laws of the Sabbath, and they were living now by the Christian Sabbath. To a lesser degree in our culture, going back a number of years, some of you can remember what used to be referred to as blue laws. These were laws enacted by legislatures and councils, city councils and all that, that required businesses to be closed on Sunday. And it was based upon this concept. But it's not based upon any principles from the New Testament. Nothing in the New Testament speaks to applying Sabbath restrictions and regulations upon the first day of the week. Well, then, is there anything about the Sabbath that is ours? Turn, if you would, over to the fourth chapter of Hebrews. In verses 1 through 11, the Hebrew writer takes up a discussion about the rest. He says of it in verse 7, he describes the promise that remains of entering His rest. That's Christ's rest. He warns them about being involved in ways that would mean they were actually turning away from His rest. They were coming short of His rest. And so he builds off of that. You drop down to verse 4. He says, for He has thus said somewhere concerning the seventh day, that God rested on the seventh day from all His works. And again, in this passage, they shall not enter My rest. Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, those who formerly had good news preached to them failed to enter because of disobedience. He again fixes a certain day. Today. saying through David, after so long a time, just as has been said before, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart. For if Joshua had given them rest, he would not have spoken of another day after that. You remember Joshua followed Moses. He led the people into the promised land, conquering it. Well, was that the ultimate rest that God had planned for the faithful? No, because Joshua spoke, he says, prophetically, of another day that was to come. The day that David spoke of, he mentions there in verse 7, when he just says, it's today. Not a certain day, not a seventh day. Continues on verse 9, there remains therefore a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Do you have a Sabbath? Yes, you do. You have a rest. For the one who has entered his rest has himself also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall through following the same example of disobedience. Children of Israel failed to enter their rest because of their disobedience. But the Christian has a rest provided for them, into which we can enter. But we must, he says, be cautious that we not fail to enter that rest. We sing a song often titled, "We'll Work Till Jesus Comes." First verse goes this way, "O land of rest, for thee I sigh. When will the moment come when I shall lay my armor by and dwell in peace at home?" Well, it'll come one day. We'll be able to enter that rest one day. But until then, as the song says in the chorus, we'll work. Till Jesus comes, we'll work. Till Jesus comes, we'll work. Till Jesus comes, and we'll be gathered home. And it's there, at home, in that final rest that God has provided for His people, that we can truly then enjoy our Sabbath, our rest. Are you headed that way? Are you devoted to that idea of until that time comes, I'll work for Jesus? Well, in order for you to do that, you have to belong to Jesus. You have to be His, which means you have to surrender your will to His, give your obedience to Him through His gospel. If you believe Jesus is God's Son and would turn away from your sins, confessing your faith, being baptized, washing the guilt of your sins away, you'll become one of His. And you'll have that hope set before you, like every faithful child of God has, of a rest one day when we are gathered home. You're subject to His invitation. Won't you come to Him tonight while we stand and sing?